Welcome to another episode of That's So Cincinnati, our post-election episode. Jason Williams along with Sherry Coolidge, silent fill on the ones and twos. Sherry, you got your coffee. We're, a day and a half now removed from election day as we record here on Thursday morning, November the 5th. our special guest today, before we jump into it and break it all down, is Hamilton County Republican Party Chairman Alex Triantafilou, fresh off of a huge, huge win with Joe Dieters holding on to the prosecutor's seat. Rough night otherwise for the Hamilton County GOP, but looking forward to him joining the podcast here here in just a little bit. But first, Sherry, let's dive in and give our hot takes on this election now, as we've had a day and a half here to sort of process it.
Here's my first hot take. I stayed up very late on election night at the Hamilton County Board of Elections, certainly not as late as the primary, you know, with the 17,000 ballots that needed to be counted. You know, it wasn't too bad. It was, you know, especially for a presidential election. But I'm so tired. And there's been elections where I've just stayed up around the clock like 24 hours and been less tired than this. So, how much sleep have you gotten in the last 2 days?
Well, I went to bed at 6 a.m. on Wednesday morning. So on election night, I got done with work at about 3. And then I just, you know how it is. Like the adrenaline's pumping. It's the Super Bowl for political writers. And I went home on I-75. Desolate, dark I-75 at 3:30 in the morning, and got home and then just clicked on all the cable channels and had my laptop up and just couldn't go to bed until 6. I watched it all up until 6 and watched the whole dump of Wisconsin, or the whole change, the flip in Wisconsin. I was up for that, maybe one of few people who were. but yeah, I got through 2 hours of sleep on that night. Well, I got up at what, 8:30, so 2.5 hours.
You look fresh as the daisy.
And then I got a little sleep last night, so back at it. You know, you kind of run on adrenaline over a few days, and then I feel I'll probably crash about midday tomorrow. So, but you know, it's interesting, as you know, like Sherry, after an election, you're on the phone just as much as you were before it, with all the campaigns and the candidates talking about breaking it down. Everyone wants to give their take on why they thought this is the key to why, you know, Joe Dieters won or Steve Chabot won. And so I've had a lot of conversations about, you know, sort of doing a deeper dive into figuring out how some of these folks won or how they lost. So,
and, you know, we really, because of the sea change here in Hamilton County, you know, it was really like, should we have Gwen McFarland on or Alex Triantafilou? And, you know, Gwen is winning a lot of praise, but we just wanted to see where the Republican Party is going to go for here. So yeah, we thought that would be, you know, there's going to be plenty of time to watch how the Democrats handle all of this. And there's going to be so much change as these people take office.
Yeah.
And so we're going to pay a lot of attention to that over the coming time. But we did want to ask, you know, what's next for the Republican Party in Hamilton County, which is why, you know, we ultimately went with having Alex on. And we're going to talk to him about all of these races. But let's you and I talk about the big one. And that, not the president, which at this point we don't still know who actually won it. So, but for us, who is it, Jason?
Well, I'm trying to figure out here. Or do you mean the congressional race, or do you mean the prosecutor's race?
The prosecutor's race.
Both were huge. Let's talk about the prosecutor's race. Joe Dieters, what an impressive win. $1.7 million raised. I know we had David Niven on. What was that, before the election?
Yeah, a couple weeks
ago. He talked about Joe Dieters running kind of an old fashioned campaign, and you know, it seemed like it was a little under the radar. But really, I think it was probably to us, or maybe just generally the people who pay attention, it might have seemed like it was under the radar because so much noise was being made about the presidential election. And then what little bit of, you know, oxygen left in the room was being taken up by the congressional race. But Joe Dieters ran the campaign of his life. And his campaign folks have said that, that he feels like he ran the best campaign he's ever run. This was his 11th campaign of his career. He's now 10-1 in his entire career. He lost his first ever election when he was in his mid-20s for Springfield Township Trustee, and he's never lost since. And that's over 7 prosecutor's races, 1 clerk of courts race, and 2 state treasurer races. But Team Dieters says this is absolutely the best campaign he's ever run. It was incredibly sophisticated. It was not an old-fashioned campaign. Maybe on the surface, a lot of TV ads, yes. A lot of, you know, Joe being out at things and, you know, saying hi to people, and Joe Dieters volunteers out and about, and Joe Dieters yard signs. So from that standpoint, yeah, it may have looked like, but this was an incredibly detailed, sophisticated operation. Our loyal listeners may remember this, and maybe they don't, because it was a real subtle thing that Joe Dieters said on the podcast last August. I remember this too, really well. You and I asked him about, hey, you got this election coming up next year. What's the campaign going to be like? And he said, I don't know if you remember this, Sherry, but he said, we're going to take some of the things that John Cranley used in his mayoral election. And so that really stood out to me, because it was like John Cranley ran a very sophisticated, data-driven modeling. You know, it's this sort of new wave of, you know, it's been going on at the higher levels of politics for a while. But really, John Cranley from a local level sort of brought this, you know, really detailed, you know, data-driven thing in such a really detailed way. And Joe Dieters took that and, as his team said, really injected steroids into a more countywide operation. Overall, between radio, TV, and digital, they had 23 different messages that were targeting different audiences. Just in the last week alone, they spent $70,000 on digital ads. I thought what was most interesting, and I've got, you know, all these things laid out here, and without, I don't want to bore people with all these details, but this was one thing that I did think was incredibly interesting in terms of their, what they call in the political world is micro-targeting. Somehow in there, the data folks on his team, and he had Mike DeWine campaign, you know, consultants doing his fundraising and some of his consulting. They noticed 21,000 suburban women who had left the Republican Party, and they targeted that as like because of Trump. The Dieters campaign targeted those 21,000 voters with 4 different mailers and 6 different digital ads beginning in mid-September all the way up until the end of the race. They did not mention Republican, Democrat. There was no party affiliation mentioned in this messaging. It was more of like, They promoted experience. They promoted, hey, the law and order, keeping your family safe. And I just thought that was really interesting. So that's just an example of how detailed this was. You know, another thing too is former Bengals Frosty Rucker, Pac-Man Jones, also did radio ads for Joe Dieters' campaign. Frosty Rucker talked about how Joe Dieters did the right thing on the Ray Tenzing trial, by, you know, trying the former UC police officer. And so there were so many different, you know, targeted audiences in terms of targeted voters and audiences that they really tried to bring in. And I think it's absolutely what he had to do to win in the face of the Trump resistance. And for Joe Dieters to win this race and overcome a 64,000 vote deficit that Trump lost by in the county is really an impressive victory, especially when you look at the rest of the Republican ticket locally.
I mean, you are one of the people who predicted that. I wasn't really saying, and because you didn't really know. When I was watching all of the people with the, you know, the Democratic slate, that seemed very difficult to overcome. And for many, it was, but not for him. And this kind of, I think this is like the campaign of the future.
No, there's no doubt about it. Steve Chabot did some of the same things. I can get into that if we want to talk a little bit about that race here in a sec. But I want to mention too about the, and we're gonna have Alex Triantafilou on here momentarily. But really, kind of having a day to process this. You know, I know there's a lot of narrative out there, local politics right now. Should Alex Triantafilou stay or go? And but if you really look at, dig deep into the numbers and some of the down ticket races, many Republicans actually outperformed Trump. And for folks like, you know, some of the down ticket folks where a lot of voters drop off and who aren't well known, like Joe Dieters, you know, is there a bigger name in local politics than Joe Dieters? But, you know, if you're a Bruce Hoffbauer, first time candidate, you're not well known countywide, still outperformed Trump, didn't win. But if you're the Republican Party right now and you're looking at this, yeah, it was a brutal election, but you could probably look at this and say, if let's say Mitt Romney or, you know, Jeb Bush or someone like that were the incumbent president, Marco Rubio, I think we'd be sitting here saying today that probably it would have been about half and half. Republicans and Democrats would have kind of split victories. Probably the Republicans may have held on to the recorder seat and the treasurer's office. Maybe it'd have been about half and half on the judicial races. But that's of course not the case. And that's not to take away from the Democrats, because I huge kudos to the Democrats, especially on their judicial slate, winning 9 of the 13 races. Eddie Davenport, the executive director for the Hamilton County Democratic Party, is really brought a few years ago to the party this real mentality of like, hey, I mean, they were intentional about it, and they targeted taking over the court system in the next few election cycles. And as much as we write and talk about how fractured the Democratic Party is, this is one example of where folks work together. The judicial slates, the last two election cycles, have really worked well together. They've done what's called a coordinated campaign, where the judicial candidates will pool all their money, and then they'll run as a slate. And so they'll do mailers together, digital ads together. And the whole thing is that, hey, there's no party affiliation listed by judicial candidates, as you know, on the ballot. And it's to communicate to voters who exactly to vote for. And they've done a great job of getting people to vote for their judicial candidates. And so them winning 9, and what does that mean? Them winning 9? Well, they took over the Democrats took over the Court of Appeals in this election. And they also took over control of the Common Pleas Court. So, and we don't have the final, obviously, the certified results yet. Still, a few weeks away, but pretty sure that's what's going
to
happen.
No one's expecting anything to change at this point with who we think the winners are, except in the presidential race. That's
correct.
The one unknown at this point. But there's just everything is too far apart. You know who did come pretty close, but not close enough? Charlie Winburn. We talked about him with David Niven. I'm not surprised, you know, because the voters know his name. You know, and they were willing to, if they were going down the slate, be like, oh, Charlie, and you know, fill in that box, but just not enough.
Well, other than in talking to, you know, the folks that we talked to in the insider world of Democrat and local and Republican politics locally, you know, besides hearing from folks on both sides, I heard, yeah, there was a lot of confidence that Joe Dieters was going to be able to pull this out. And, you know, now really digging down into what the campaign really did, now you can understand why. the only other name that I heard that people thought could win of the local Republican candidates was Charlie Winburn. And I will say, I saw his signs more than any other signs from any local campaign, probably of any campaigns. His signs were everywhere. But it's a good example that yard signs aren't necessarily a reflection of who's going to win. What else? What other takeaways did you have from this election?
I think one of my biggest takeaways, not necessarily like anything that's in front of our face right now, but it's really like, what does everyone's bench look like? You know, there were some of these judges that were voted out had just, you know, on the one side, of course, they have tons of experience and that's a good thing. But on the other side, it hasn't really allowed, like, who are the new, you know, Republicans running for things. And even, honestly, the new Democrats, yes, they won, but some of them, you know, it's really very slate driven.
Yep.
Like, it's time to really get to know them, you know, and I am a big believer in not just you and I as reporters knowing them. I think the voters actually need to know them and really should not necessarily be voting a slate, voting who you believe in and on their records. And so this is really a time I think we're going to see both sides be like, wow. And so we're going to ask Alex about this. Is, you know, Joe going to run again? I don't think that's clear, you know, and that's not, you know, a big shock, I don't think, here to anyone who's a regular listener. But then, like, well, then who's next? But I'm not just talking about Republicans, but really, like, for the Democrats, as things go forward, I'm interested to see who's next.
Yeah. No, great point. You know, for the Republican Party, there has to be, because Joe Dieters is not the future of their party. He's the immediate future, obviously, with him winning. But for the long term, there has to be a, you know, kind of, I guess, more of a robust effort to recruit, you know, different types of candidates who are going to have that crossover appeal. And, you know, so that's, I think, the storyline that's going to play out for the Republicans moving forward here is who is their kind of next wave. So are they even going to be able to be competitive at all moving forward? I'm of the mind that with Trump moving on, well, we don't know the official yet, but I mean, the fact that Trump's not going to be on the ballot again, no matter what, that helps them and maybe sort of brings things back into it's still blue county, or it's I would say it's a purple county without Trump, with it favoring the Democrats, obviously. But it'll be interesting to see in terms of what the strategy will be in terms of in what offices they want to try to go for and really feel like is important. Certainly the prosecutor's office is something I think they're going to want to try to do everything they can to keep control of for years to come. But then the storyline on the Democratic side is a couple things. Can they handle this newfound success, or are they just going to, you know, they're going to fight amongst each other? So now the competitiveness of – you're going to start to see a shift toward primaries and a lot of primaries among the Democratic Party now, because those are going to be the races in a lot of cases for a lot of these local races. And also – what's next for a lot of folks? Aftab Pureball, Denise Driehaus.
You tweeted this on election night for the first congressional district. Get in line for next time.
And, you know, Kate Schroeder. And so one of the few real opportunities that regional local Democrats have is that first congressional district in 2022, the redistricting coming up. The Democrats are under the impression that they're going to get a favorable seat out of this. They may be a little overconfident on that, because at the end of the day, it is the Republican legislature that has the final say on it. Something tells me that there will be a battle there over the redistricting there. Certainly there are new rules in place to bring more fair districts into play. But, you know, you're right. Get in line. I wrote my column on Cincinnati.com today as we're recording sort of what's next for the Democrats and in terms of races. And, you know, I you're going to see Denise Driehaus, Yvette Simpson, potentially Alicia Reese, Aftab Puraval, maybe even John Cranley, Cecil Thomas. I think all these folks will take a look at potentially running for Congress in 2022. In terms of statewide races, there's not a real pathway for the Democratic Party, but that maybe that's a podcast for a different day, because the Ohio Democratic Party is in a bad way right now. So,
all right. So I feel like you're just a column machine. We've had two this week. I bet there's going to be one more. So I just want to encourage everyone to keep reading your column as keep hearing things. And it does take time to like really assess things and dig into the numbers. And everyone at the Inquirer is still doing that. We have a lot of maps up. Mike Nyergis, not a name you hear a lot in the Inquirer newsroom. But if you see these motion graphics and these maps, he's behind them, making things very easy to just understand at a glance. So
the best in the biz.
Really just look award-winning every year. You know, he wins a lot of those. Like even nationally, people look at his graphics. And so at a glance, so if you see those maps on the Cincinnati.com app, which I know you all have, click on those because they're great, quickie assessments.
Definitely. Are you, I gotta jump and do something with my kid, but I'm gonna hand it off to you.
I got this.
To chat with Alex, tell him I said hey, and let's jump over to Alex Giantafila.
All right, here we are, special guest time on That's So Cincinnati. This is, as we said earlier, Thursday morning. The presidential race is not decided yet. And we're all tired because it's been some long nights. Alex, how are you doing?
I'm doing fine, Sherry. It's good to be with you.
So when we were talking about having guests, we were like, where did we see a lot of impact? And that is in the Republican races in Hamilton County. So it's been a while since we've had you on. So we're like, let's break it down with the Republican Party chairman. So are you ready?
I'm more than ready. As you know, Sherry, I'm a big fan of the podcast, so I'm glad to be on it myself. And I'm ready for the tough questions.
Okay. Well, let's start with, this race, this is a presidential year, and you have been, how long have you been chair? Or how many presidential elections?
This is my fourth presidential election already.
Okay. So don't make me do math this early when I'm tired. So 2004?
2008, actually.
2008. All right.
Yep.
What did you see that was different this time from past elections?
Well, that's a good question. The one thing that's continually happening in our county is we have this demographic shift. So, I've been active with the Republican Party, really, Sherry, since the mid-90s. And, in 2000, myself and Greg Hartman, my good friend and political partner, we ran Southwest Ohio for then Governor Bush. And, we won Hamilton County. In 2004, we once again co-chaired the effort for Governor then President Bush for his reelection in 2004, and the county was very much red, and things went very well. And then fast forward to 2008, we took a turn, and that turn now has the county blue in presidential cycles, and that trend has continued, and frankly, not gone the way we like it as Republicans, and that's gotten even worse here this last cycle. So, I guess what was the biggest change is Donald Trump, lost Hamilton County by about 37,000 votes in 2016. That number got worse. We're down to about 65,000. We're still counting ballots. It probably ends up being a little worse than 65,000 vote loss at the top of the ticket. So what's different? That's different. Those are the numbers. But I will say this. What was definitely a little different is that Donald Trump had a ground game here in Ohio. And I think ultimately his 8-point win in the state of Ohio, Sherry, is a result of a first-rate ground game and a great campaign. The polls had Donald Trump either even or even slightly down in Ohio. His results, an 8-point win, that clearly has something to do with a campaign. So what was different was Donald Trump's on-the-ground effort here in Hamilton County and in Ohio. Now, again, the county results are what they are, but the southwestern Ohio vote was there for Donald Trump, and that's a result of a pretty good ground game.
I mean, if you look at that map, I was taking a peek at it this morning. It's not that hard to read. There's a couple blue dots for Joe Biden in these urban centers in Ohio, and the rest is shaded pink all the way up to red. So this wasn't a surprise to you. Did it make you prepare any different for the local races, knowing just how blue Hamilton County is?
You know, look, it's a nice edge that you have to walk, and your question's a good one. Do you prepare differently? You know, it's funny. You may not remember because you've done a lot of these podcasts, but we actually discussed this the last time I appeared with you and Jason on the podcast. And that is, you know, how do you do this? How do you juggle this idea that you have to be for the presidential ticket when you know that, you know, that particular candidate in that particular cycle is not going to fare well in your county? And, you know that going in. So how you prepare really is you just try to find the best candidates. You can complicate this in my role all you want, but the fact of the matter is you're just looking to present the voters with the best possible candidate, you know, absent party. And, you know, look, I mean, despite the fact that he lost, I would argue that Bruce Hoffbauer was one of the more outstanding candidates we've fielded in a long time. I'm proud of our effort to bring him into the mix. Again, he fell short. You know, it's hard to be known, and, you know, voters on the Democratic side were disciplined down the ballot, especially into that race. But, you know, all we can try to do to prepare for these things is to just try to find the better candidates. You know, our judicial races, which I'm guessing you'll ask about, you know, we had like 170 years worth of experience. I think they had like 3 years of experience. So the best I can do, and I think really the best any party leader can do when you're facing those headwinds, is to find the best people, you know, to go out and find the best candidates. Because, you know, Sherry, we ask people time and again, you know, what do you look for when you vote? And they'll say, well, you know, I'm not a Republican or a Democrat. I look for the best person. Well, we try to present the best person every time we can. So I guess the long answer is the preparation is, you know, how do you get the best candidate to run? And finding the best candidate will always be my number one goal.
To me, the biggest takeaway of this race is really seeing this vote down the slate. I've never seen it like this. I spent the few of the days at the beginning of early voting, like spending some time with Sherry Poland, story to come, everybody, the director of the Board of Elections, which we'll talk about that right at the end. I do want to swing around to that. But this was a very slate. You always have some of that. Here's your sample ballot. Do people vote all the way down? I think that we've seen not necessarily in Hamilton County, but this time that was definitely true. And do you feel like that was true at home too, with this like 151,000 mail-in absentee sent out?
I do. And I think really it's a trend. I think that political scientists will continue to talk about. This is what I call it, kind of the nationalization of every race. You know, it used to be, you know, it didn't matter if you lived in Cheviot or something, right? It, you know, if you liked your local council member in Cheviot, you didn't really care whether they were a Republican or Democrat. You cared whether or not your streets were being properly cleaned and paved. But now, I mean, it's just a question, and I've seen this occur over the course of my political involvement. I mean, you know, our judges get asked a whole lot more, are you Republican or Democrat? Or, you know, instead of saying, you know, because there's really necessarily not a Republican or Democrat way to be a judge all the time. You know, it's just about listening to the law and the facts and making a decision. But we see this nationalization, as I call it, of down ticket races. And so I think you're, you know, the extent that Democrats have the numbers in Hamilton County, which it appears they do, you know, that this nationalization is going to hurt us down ticket, as people just flat out identify the person that aligns with their party affiliation and then punches the ballot all the way down with little, you know, little care for qualifications. Look, that all, by the way, held up right up until you get to the Joe Dieters race, who wins, you know, pretty comfortably in a blue county, you know, against an opponent people thought was, you know, was going to be pretty formidable. So there's always an exception, I suppose, that proves the rule, right?
Well, you know, I'm calling that the Joe magic. Come on, let's face it. We know that he is charismatic, popular, and, you know, just the name identity there. And I think that people are generally happy with him. I thought it was going to be razor thin, and I wasn't willing to call that one, which Jason stepped out for a minute, and I'm sure you guys can tell. However, I mean, he did call it, didn't he? In his predictions.
He did call it. He did miss the Shabbat race, which I was hoping to give him a little grief about on the podcast today. But anyway, everybody keeps missing the Shabbat race. But no, I agree with you about Joe Dieters, Sherry, 100%. He's a known commodity in this town, you know. And as I've shared even over the last 48 hours, you know, Joe is got an image, and it's the correct image. He's his own man. He does what he thinks is right. There have been times in my career doing this politically where he's inflamed Republicans, and then there are times where he has inflamed Democrats. And, you know, that's what you want in a county prosecutor. You want somebody who calls it down the middle, the way they see it, consistent with the law and what's right. Joe is not afraid to be hard on the bad guys, and he certainly has been very hard on the bad guys. He's got people on death row, and if you're really, truly dangerous, he'll take care of that. But also famous for giving second chances and giving breaks to people who just made a one-off mistake. You know, Joe, Sherry, you know, time and again, you get these kind of rollover baby deaths where people put babies in their beds, and, you know, they'll roll over them at night. And these tragic things you don't even really think about or talk about. You know, Joe, in some communities, those get prosecuted. Joe doesn't prosecute those unless there's something more egregious, right? I mean, some people say that's so careless and negligent, perhaps you should prosecute. Joe's just been very reasonable and stuff like that. He's got a huge heart. You know how good of friends he and I are, so I'm obviously biased in his favor more than just being a Republican. But Joe is he's very, very strong as our county prosecutor, and really deserved that win on Tuesday.
I do, and tell me if you think I'm correct here. I do think, and we're going to talk about, you know, the Democrats really, they want a lot of these judgeships. I feel like in general, with the idea that Charmaine McGuffey won, and the way this county's going, with now we have a lot more Democratic judges, and council seems to be, you know, more liberal than it has in the past, I think we could see some justice system reforms. Do you feel like this sets up a good dynamic to do that? A longtime prosecutor, a new sheriff, and, you know, this more liberal courthouse, do you think we're going to see some of that change?
Well, you know, I'm a pretty law and order Republican, so I'd be suspect of whatever that all means, and I'd have to see what they're talking about. But yeah, I suppose you're right. I hadn't really thought much about it. I think actually one of the other local TV media outlets was doing something on it the other day, and I didn't catch it. But yeah, the answer is they may attempt some of that. I hope they do it wisely. I think that one thing that separates Cincinnati from a lot of other big cities is, while we do have a crime problem, you know, it's not the serious kind of problem like you see in places like Chicago and other big cities. So, you know, I'm hoping that we can continue to take the bad guys off the streets. I mean, you know, they're the most important thing that we do, I think, in law enforcement, is just identifying the truly bad people who really need to be incarcerated. And then, you know, the large majority of people who are charged with crimes are usually just, you know, it's a one-off situation, or they just had a bad day or something. And, you know, of course, those get punished. But, you know, the identifying kind of the truly dangerous people from the people who are just, you know, street criminals or whatever, that's a different matter. So anyway, I hope that the reforms don't lead us down a path of, you know, putting people more at risk. I mean, our community's made such investments over the Rhine, and, you know, you see what's happening on the banks is all pretty exciting. You hate to see any of that get marred by criminal behavior. So I hope as they achieve power in this county that they are mindful of the investments we've made, and that they protect them by making people feel safe where they go.
And when you really look at things, there is, you know, defund the police did become, they were a talking point in the prosecutor's race. And every time I saw that, I was like, but they don't control the budgets. And so those budgets are still pretty much remaining intact. I mean, nothing with, you know, I don't expect some change at the top at the sheriff's office, I do think. But I mean, that's every time that you have a different sheriff, but not with like the number of people and that, and law enforcement, I do think pretty much stays the same.
Yeah, I think that's right, actually. And you know, I I'm concerned, frankly, about the sheriff's office. I didn't like some of what I heard from their candidate, but, you know, I'm trying to be gracious here and trying to be dignified here and defeat as we think the better candidate did not prevail in that race. But, you know, we'll watch that race very carefully. And I'm optimistic still as a Republican that if they falter too much, Sherry, you know, I intend to be there, and our candidates intend to be there to offer the voters an alternative. And, you know, that's going to be our job here as the loyal opposition. position is to watch carefully what they're doing with these kind of things, whether it be judges or the sheriff. And look, Joe is never afraid to speak out. And I think if Joe starts to see this go too far to the left and move towards some movement toward hurting law enforcement, I think Joe will be speaking out as well.
And I did want to point out, too, one of the interesting things about the Hamilton County race is if you look elsewhere, we did see it's always like, okay, the prosecutor seems to be the last holdout. The people say, okay, law and order, but everything else, you know, can be these Democrat votes. We saw in Franklin County, their longtime prosecutor, their Joe Dieters, he did lose by a lot. And so Franklin County spoke a little differently than this county did.
Well, they did, and you know, and I'm reluctant to point it out because I have great friends in both places. But you know, they had a wipeout on the Republican side in both other big cities in this state. Cleveland and Columbus both did not have a single Republican win. Now, you know, I had a friend of mine jokingly say, "Alex, your motto can't be 'We suck less.'" So I'm just saying I share that in the interest of humor. But you know, that's not what I'm trying to suggest, and that is that you know we did better than they did. But in fact, Hamilton County did manage to hold on to, you know, four judgeships in the prosecutor's race. And then we won the, you know, one of the two contested state rep races. So, you know, we live to fight another day. But, you know, your question is correct, or your statement is correct. And that is that did Ron O'Brien, who was a prosecutor for almost 20 years up there, did come up short in Franklin County. And, you know, that's something that we're mindful of, and we're going to be mindful of it in 2024. And, I hope, as I told Joe, and I'll tell him again today when I see him, which I see him often, that he needs to stay healthy and needs to run again in 4 years because he gives us our best chance to hold that seat. He's been a terrific candidate and a great prosecutor.
Did he say that's his plan?
Yeah,
this is the hot seat part.
There's always a story that comes out of these podcasts, Jerry. I'm hoping not to make one today. But no, he hasn't committed to running in 2024. Let me make sure that's clear.
So what, the judgeships, was it nine? The Democrats took nine seats?
Yes.
What does that mean for the overall courthouse? I mean, when I came here in 2002, I think there was two Democratic judges.
Yeah.
What does it mean for the overall courthouse? Do you have that number?
Yeah, I mean it's a seismic shift. There's just no denying it. And Sherry, you know, I was a judge, and that was a friendly place for Republicans. But I will say this, and look, I'm a practicing lawyer. I've been at Dinsmore for 13 years here in Cincinnati. You know, some of the Democratic judges do a fine job, and I can say that post election here. I hope that some of these new judges will align themselves with some of the more reasonable Democratic voices. You know, we for a long time we had somebody like Judge Niehaus, who was an endorsed Democrat, Judge Gorman, you know, old school Democrat. These were fine judges and good men, and they were, you know, they weren't ideologically aligned when they were on the bench. And you know, if you really dive in as a lawyer, you know, that sometimes I hear it all the time from fellow litigators. They'll go to a Republican's room and get a ruling that they feel like would come from a Democrat, and then vice versa. You know, you'll get a Democrat who might vote more like you would think a Republican would. So these things aren't as clear cut as you would think on ideological lines. This isn't city council. This isn't county commissioner. And God forbid, it's not the Congress. So, you know, it's the judges have a different responsibility. And I, you know, what I hope is that these new people take that as seriously as a lot of our Republicans did. You know, we lost some great people. Judge Pat Dinkelacker is going to go down in history as one of the great judges really to ever serve in Hamilton County. You know, the voters just did not see clear to reelect him because of this blue wave, this mini blue wave in Hamilton County. But, you know, I hope
on that race, I have to ask, do you feel like that was a more specific, some voters were, you know, very upset about the Tracy Hunter sentencing?
I don't see
that.
We
have not had a big court case like that in a long time.
Yeah, that's a fair question, given that he dealt with that. But you know, he still came narrowly close to winning. You know, frankly, I haven't really crunched the numbers so much to discern where he may have lost votes. But when you have the kind of wave that we just saw, I mean, look, I mean, somebody like Judge John Williams, who's just been a credit to the juvenile court, you know, what did he do wrong, right? I mean, Russ Mox is the terrific judge in the first district. So so much of this was just party line voting. And, you know, as I've said over the last 24, 48 hours, you know, our voters did turn out in huge numbers. They're just, frankly, there just aren't enough of them left in Hamilton County. So you got to be able to get some crossover votes. And I can't say with any specificity whether Judge Dinkelacker's very appropriate and professional handling of that Hunter case had anything to do with his defeat. But I suppose that's something people can speculate about.
And then we did see you did have a win with Gehring, the longtime county treasurer, decided to run for judge, and he beat Tom Baradon, one of the Democrat judges. I mean, it even though, like you say, nine and it's a lot, I mean, you did have those four wins, and they were very pointed wins, I do feel like. So who were the other two?
Yeah, it was Judge Amy Searcy, who's a former vice chair of the GOP and also director of our Board of Elections and a good close friend of the party's. Amy Searcy appears to have held on in the Domestic Relations Court. And then, you know, the other big plum judgeship, which the Democrats have gone after a couple times, is the probate court. And again, if you're just sort of listening in and you're not in the legal community, probate court, it doesn't mean much to you, but the probate court judge has lots of jobs working there, lots of people working for him, that is, and a lot of magistrate jobs, which are really good legal jobs, and also make key appointments. You know, the probate court judge appoints to the Housing Authority Board, he appoints the Parks Board. So our probate court under Ohio law has significant responsibility. And you might recall that former mayor, former councilman, and our friend Charlie Lucan tried to take out Ralph Winkler 6 years ago and failed. And this year they ran another felon named Pavan Parikh, who I think came up short as well. So we won that race, the Winkler race, and the Searcy race. Melba Marsh also, by the way, was another win for us on Election Day, long time, as I call her, legendary judge Melba Marsh in the courthouse, who's just a treasure. So she held on as well, which were, again, those are, we're grateful for small things. So those were good wins for us.
And some of those races do show that the voters know these candidates and were voting for them. I think, honestly, Amy Searcy, I saw her work so hard. I think that played a lot into it with, like, you did have to run a campaign, pandemic or not. If you look at the Fanon Rucker, Joe Dieter's race, Joe, of course, outraised him. You know, he's that juggernaut. That's not a surprise. Almost $1 million. I could recite all of the television ads if anyone would like me to right now by heart, because I don't even watch that much TV. But I didn't see a ground game out of Fanon Rucker really at all. And I know Jason said that Joe ran one. He didn't have too much of one unless you count all of the fundraising and those television commercials. That was a very traditional thing. And I did not see that out of Fanon Rucker. As popular as he is, I mean, his votes came from people loving him and knowing him, plus the slate, I think. But I didn't see that come from him.
Yeah, you know, it was definitely an odd year in the sense that a ground game, when we use those words in politics, you and I know what they mean. Listeners might know as well. But the fact of the matter is a ground game just means getting people into the communities, talking directly to voters. You know, that became more difficult with the pandemic. And, you know, so it's not totally fair, I think, to judge people on their ground game this year. But I will tell you this. We as a party did focus on the ground game in early June. Helped a lot of our judges. And then Joe's ground game really ultimately toward the end really ramped up, and he was talking to a lot of targeted voters and also, you know, an excellent, excellent mail program targeted to voters. But really, if you're going to be a pundit, which I'm being right now, Joe delivered a knockout blow on television that I thought was very, very effective. And I know, you know, again, if you're a Fanon Rucker supporter, maybe you didn't like it, but the fact of the matter is, you know, some of what former Judge Rucker, who I have great respect for, by the way, you know, some of what he'd said in the public arena just didn't fit what we thought was the mainstream of Hamilton County politics. And Joe was able to point that out. And by the way, it wasn't $1 million. It was 1.7 million, Sherry.
Oh, I'm going to leave that to the politics reporters. That's the kind of math I'm not going to do this time.
Yep.
Okay. So, just because I'm the city hall reporter, let's look into the future here. Next year's the municipal race. Do you think that we are going to see Amy Murray come back? You know, she took this job with the Trump administration. I don't think there's a sea change, like just one day they're all working and one day they're not. But I do feel like she's probably going to come on home. Do you see her running for anything?
You know, I think, again, harkening back to my last visit, I think I made news last time with your podcast with that. When at the time she was talking about a maybe a possible run against Steve Chabot. By the way, that's not where she is now at all. I haven't talked to Amy since the election. I do talk to her often. Frankly, I suspect she'll eventually come back. She's a political appointee. That is assuming Donald Trump doesn't win re-election, which there's still a possibility of that. But
I agree. I don't want to edge, yeah, yeah. At the time we're recording this, it is like edged to Joe Biden, but I'm not calling the race. If the TV big networks are afraid to call it, I'm certainly not going to. So you're correct. But yeah, if that's what were to happen.
But I'm going to say, can I just say one thing about Amy Murray, Sherry, with your permission? Amy Murray is a gem of a candidate, a great friend, a great person. She was a wonderful member of council. So look, when you're me and you're sort of, you're like the coach trying to put players on the field. I mean, I'm dying to get Amy Murray. You know, she's a five-tool player, so to speak, you know, in baseball parlance. She's got everything you want in a candidate. She's brilliant. She's a great legislator, great government official. She's a good fundraiser. She's well-spoken, and she's good, solid people. So, I would love to see Amy Murray return to the local political scene. I have no idea and I know people are speculating, as they should, because she's so talented, but I just have no idea what her next step is going to be.
Do you feel like, I mean, not of course all the judges, I don't know where they live, but some of them I'm sure live in the county. Are you looking around and thinking, you're still trying to shore up who's going to be running for council? Have you shifted into that, or you need a little break this week?
Well, no, we shifted into that actually over the summer. We began a regular series of Zoom meetings with a potential slate of candidates. And, Amy Murray left in February of 2020. And shortly there, we had several people who put in for her spot, as and we had a really good, fair process. Whereas Jason, he didn't think so. But by the way, I'm just gigging him. I hope he's going to listen. But we did. We had a really good process to determine her successor. And in that process, we identified several candidates. What we started to do is we started a series of Zoom meetings with potential candidates for city council. Look, we're realistic about what it takes to win a race at the city of Cincinnati as a Republican, but we're not giving up. We have two members now. We think that they're both strongly contributing members. Betsy Sunderman obviously is standing, very tough for law enforcement. We think that voice is required in the city. Jeff Pastor is also, very common sense, fiscally commonsensical kind of guy. So, we want to add to that. So we've had these meetings. We've had these Zoom meetings that we're doing, regularly. We did take a little break in the action here for about a month and a half, but we're going to resume those here right at the end of November. We've got one candidate already announced, Liz Keating, and she's already out there working it. So there's no rest for us. We will be back at it. As a matter of fact, on Monday, I've got my first staff meeting post-election, and one of four agenda items that I approved this morning was to talk about city council. So we're going to absolutely try to field as many candidates as we can, put together a great slate of people, and offer the voters an alternative to what they've seen at City Hall.
I know. I'm still working like my regular beat, and I called again. Today's Thursday. Called around yesterday doing some stuff, and people are like, Sherry, it's the day after the election. It's all not decided yet. And I was like, still. So I think I'm taking a little break this week, and Monday we'll hit the ground running again. All right. So I have one more question for you.
Sure.
A lot of people are looking to you. I mean, statewide people are looking at David Pepper as the party chair and saying, all of these statewide electeds are Republicans. What can you do about it? And you're hearing some of that too yourself. What's next for you here? Do you feel like people are saying that, or that's tamped down a little bit with the idea that you did have some wins here?
Yeah, no, and I appreciate the question. And the answer is I haven't really heard it much other than, frankly, I think Jason said his phone blew up. I don't know, maybe people were just afraid to say it to me directly. I've never tried to make this about me. It's not me trying to deflect. I'm happy to explain to anybody who wants to explain to them about what we're facing here. We run a great party organization. If you go around the state of Ohio, they think we do a terrific job here, and we do. We have a great staff. We have great volunteers. We have great donors. I understand. I'm in the hot seat. I'll take the heat as it comes. I know my business, Sherry. I know what it takes to win. I also know the challenges associated with winning in a blue county. My goal here, what's the future for me? I'm staying. I want to stay. I'm going to do this. My intention here is to find the best candidates who can win races. My focus is really going to be on finding candidates who have the appeal across the political spectrum. That's going to take some infighting, I think, within my party as we push to get candidates who don't always toe the party line as directly as maybe some in our party might, but I'm going to push forward. The other thing I'm going to do is some of the people that are out there taking shots, I'm going to call them out. What they've done is they've sought to make us less united, and that's part of it. I want to unite the party, so I end up taking a fair amount of arrows to do that, but I'm going to start speaking out a little bit stronger about the people that aren't working with us. So, you know, I'm going to stay. I'm going to fight. I know what it takes. You know, look, I've done this long enough. We've won a lot of races while I've been chairman as the county's changed. Of course, we're going to lose some, but I don't want to make it about me. I want to make it about our candidates, and that's going to be my focus.
All right. Well, thank you so much for joining us. I feel like it is Thursday, so a little rest as we watch the rest of the returns, right?
Absolutely. I think we've all earned the right to rest, and happy to join you today and let me know if I can help.
All right. Thanks so much.
Take care.
Okay. Bye.